Penguin Random House Audio presents 100 Days of Happiness by Fausto Brizzi. Read for you by Eduardo Ballerini. If I were a rich man, I'd spend most of my day lying comfortably in an overstuffed armchair thinking about death. But I'm poor, so I can only think about it in my spare moments or when no one's looking. Cesare Zavattini. Allow me to tell you about the three most important days of my life. I wouldn't want any of the three to think I'm playing favorites, so I'll list them in strict chronological order. The first was Friday, October 13, 1972. Friday the 13th. On that date, as a Fokker turboprop crash-landed in the Andes with 45 passengers who would ultimately devour each other to survive, Antonio and Carla, that is to say, my mom and dad, 18 at the time, conceived me in the back seat of an unprepossessing off-white Citroën Diane. The two teens had parked their vintage junker in a large empty square on the outskirts of Rome, included in the zoning plan by far-seeing city administrators as a handy refuge for lovebirds. It was a bleak setting, filled by the occasional abandoned refrigerator and stacks of battered cars. A perfect backdrop for a tender love story. Antonio and Carla had met that afternoon at a birthday party for Manrico, a sweaty, overweight loser from Frascati who'd been pining after Mamma ever since middle school. She'd just turned down his offer to join him in a slow dance to the languid notes of a young Elton John. And that's when she saw Papa, staring at her from a distance, and almost choked on her tuna, mayo and tomato panino. And truth be told, Papa was the kind of guy who regularly made girls choke on their panini. He was tall, skinny, and too cool for school. He played the electric guitar and regularly wrote rock music cribbed shamelessly from lesser-known songs by the Rolling Stones. He resembled Sean Connery's better-looking brother, but with a scar on one cheek that gave him a mysterious smolder that 007 could only dream of. He could hold a room full of people rapt for hours with stories about how he'd got that scar. Depending on the audience, either he'd received it in a bloody brawl in an open-air market in Mexico City, or else he'd been stabbed by a hulking rugby player from the mountains of Bergamo, brooding over a two-timing wife and a welter of painfully justifiable suspicions. Or else it had been that time that Frank Sinatra broke a bottle over his head because he couldn't stand what a good singer Antonio was. Papa was a professional bullshit artist, so outstanding in his lying skills that if he'd set his mind to it, he could easily have become Prime Minister of Italy. But I, and I alone, knew the truth, whispered to me by a dangerous double agent from the South, namely my Aunt Pina. Papa had taken a tumble with his tricycle when he was three, and had landed face-first on the sidewalk. Be that as it may, Antonio the lady-killer liked to retire each night to the back seat of his Citroën Diane with a different blushing passenger. That night it was Mamma's turn, and she was indeed seduced, but not, however, abandoned, because at the very instant of supreme pleasure, a red Fiat 500 smashed into the rear fender of my parents' car. At the wheel and riding shotgun were two half-drunk 20-year-olds from Frosinone, completely unaware of the role they'd played in tearing a condom at a crucial moment, thereby directly contributing to my advent on life's grand stage. So let me say it now, guys, wherever you may be. My sincere thanks. That fateful Friday, the 13th, I'd been set down on planet Earth as an uninvited guest, but that never kept Antonio and Carla from showering me with a fair to moderate amount of parental love, at least for as long as they were married. That's another story, though, and an infinitely sad one. If I'm up for it, I'll tell you about it later. The second most important day of my life was September 11, 2001. While everyone in the world was staring at their TV sets as special news broadcasts
Sample complete. Ready to continue?